Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. A mysterious heiress. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
It seems inevitable that rich, powerful families attract, well, their own brand of scandal. But scandal around religion, money, famous feuds, missing persons, and even murder, those are a bit rarer in our experience. Enter Edith Wolfskill, a beautiful heiress to one of California's richest and most important families. A controversial life led to an even more puzzling vanishing and death. Today on Ghost Town, the life and death of Edith Irene Wolfskill. Edith's heiress legacy in California began with her grandfather, Mathis Wolfskill, who, along with his brothers, bought 17,000 acres from Mexico in Yolo County, California. The siblings, who were some of the first English-speaking settlers in California, used this land to cultivate an agricultural empire, making them one of the most wealthy and influential families in California. An example of this, the Wolfskills were one of the first families to introduce eucalyptus trees, wine grapes, and of course, ubiquitous citrus to the state, which, as you probably know if you're anywhere in the world, are extremely California. This meant that Edith, Mathis's grandchild, born in 1872, began her life in luxury. The only girl born to John and Susan Wolfskill, Edith did all the upper-class, girly childhood things, riding, art education, and of course, being shipped off to a European, quote, finishing school. When she returned, the Philadelphia Inquirer offered the following description of Edith, one that would seal her reputation and fate, at least in one way. Quote, "We see her as one of California's prize beauties, her delicate pink-white skin and wide eyes, her long, rich brown hair and fascinating form made her the darling of the state's aristocracy. And everyone knew that her father was a millionaire." Yes, that is a direct quote. The first documented commentary about Edith's personality happened also around that time when she returned from Europe after finishing school. People around her noted, along with her beauty, that she was also behaving oddly. She developed what was described as, quote, "religious mania," which would cause her to do things like randomly praying in public. It's honestly hard to say, especially at this point in her life, just how mentally unbalanced Edith was, or if she was just an independent thinker in American high society when women were decidedly discouraged to act or think outside of their narrow social roles. Some contemporary newspaper reports described her as, quote, "eccentric," while others called her the mad heiress, who proclaimed herself later to be Empress of the World. All that can be said for sure is that by 1903, her family believed it was necessary to have her committed to San Francisco's California General Hospital. And yes, this commitment was newsworthy. It was a rich, beautiful heiress being institutionalized, after all. The San Francisco Examiner wrote in 1903, quote, "Although her parents spared no expense and did everything in their power to effect a cure, the young woman did not improve." In August of 1903, Edith was given some more personalized care. Her doctor believed she needed an operation to, quote, "restore her reason." Though it's not reported exactly what this operation was, likely it was a popular procedure called the hysterectomy, a surgery to remove the uterus so that a woman would become less, quote unquote, hysterical. You may think it was a lobotomy, but that was not fashionable for another few decades. California General was stressful for Edith, surprise, surprise. So, before her procedure, whatever that may be, the heiress actually escaped, breaking out of the facility through a window and down a fire escape. The only witness was another patient who just watched her go. The disappearance of a beautiful heiress was, of course, another bit of newsworthy information. My favorite headline about Edith around this time was from the San Francisco Call, published on August 28, 1903. It was titled, "Demented Young Woman Escapes." It said, quote, "She escaped from the institution on Wednesday night, scantily clad. Her nurse had left the room a few months after seeing that she was made comfortable in bed. When the nurse returned, the bed was empty and she sounded an alarm. A thorough search of the premises was made, but no trace of the missing patient could be found." The Wolfskill's friend, politician William Chapman Ralston Jr., hired a private detective to track her down. A few days later, a man passing Muscle Rock off Daly City saw a sad, tired woman sitting along the shore. She perfectly matched the description of the lost heiress, and so she was taken back to the hospital, despite fighting off her, quote, rescuer, where, at the hospital, she was found to be relatively healthy, if uncooperative. She must have walked all the way down there and had simply become tired out from her wanderings, the family doctor told media. Edith remained at California General for some years after until she was eventually transferred to a hospital in Los Angeles to be nearer to her parents. For the rest of her life, likely because she had that, quote, mystery surgery the doctor was recommending, Edith needed full-time care, and what grip she had left on reality was, according to many sources, loosening. A former nurse said Edith was deadly terrified of strangers. Within a decade, Edith's parents had died, leaving her somewhere between $600,000 and $800,000 controlled by her brothers, Matt and Ney, to take care of her for the rest of her days. The brothers placed her in a ranch the Wolfskills owned in Northern California, Solano County to be exact. A strange twist to this? As Matthew and Ney had been fighting for years, so they refused to be at the ranch at the same time to care for Edith. Instead, they took turns living with her, carefully scheduling their visits so they would never run into each other. The brothers allowed no outside visitors aside from staff and the occasional workman. But Edith seemed to enjoy herself in this environment. Fruit groves were surrounded by rolling hills, and a few small creeks rounded out the beautiful landscape. Edith would hike, swim, and wander the estate, a kind of outdoorsy ghost who talked to no one, just there, one with nature. This is why some people called her Empress of the World or quoted her saying she called herself that. We'll never really know, although it does seem that there was something regal about her, even though her world was also so isolated, controlled, and insular. Fast forward decades to the morning of July 14, 1929. At this point, Edith was 57 years old and left her home on foot that morning in plain summer clothes. When she didn't return for lunch, her caregivers began to worry, and eventually they reported her missing. This, of course, hadn't happened since 1903, but it had happened before, so there was, of course, much speculation. Edith's disappearance brought Matt and Nay Wolfskill face to face, where they argued violently, at one point needing to be separated. Matt was sure his sister had been kidnapped. She was a wealthy woman. Of course someone would want her for ransom. Nay thought she was dead somewhere in the Northern California hills. Press thought all kinds of things, suicide, kidnapping, or one newspaper theorized she had been, quote, attacked and slain by an itinerant fruit picker. My favorite headlines from this period, quote, wealthy Solana woman lost, boost reward for heiress, and, quote, not clad for hike. Here's an excerpt from Not Clad for Hike from the Woodland Daily Democrat, printed on July 18, 1929. Quote, one phase that heightens the mystery of Miss Wolfskill's disappearance is that she spoke of going only for a short walk and was not clad for any extended hike. When she left the ranch house at 7:30 o'clock on Sunday morning, she was bareheaded and clad in a light dress with a white shirt waist and a Japanese coolie coat. She wore her hair, which she had never bobbed, in braids. On that descriptive note, let's take a break. The investigation into Edith's whereabouts was first directed by Matthew and Nay Wolfskill, who of course had been at war, both with each other and also the use of the money their parents had set aside for Edith's care. The manager of Edith's estate hired private detectives to investigate the brothers, who eventually told a reporter, quote, "I would like to believe Miss Wolfskill wandered off and is lost. I can't believe that in view of what I've discovered." What he, quote, discovered was unfortunately never made public. Police suspicion grew that at least one of the brothers knew more about Edith's vanishing than they were ever admitting, but again, the investigation had nothing concrete to go off of. Though Edith's home was highly guarded for the purposes of the investigation, the only unrelated person allowed to enter or exit the home at this time was a woman from Fresno named Mrs. Comstock. According to a Medium article by Heather Monroe about the case, quote, "Mrs. Comstock claimed she invented a machine that could locate missing people and accurately predict if they were alive or dead. She only needed a personal belonging of the person in question and a little electricity. Mrs. Comstock promised that if she placed the item inside the wooden box and plugged it into an outlet, Edith's location would be somehow revealed. In a desperate plea to find Edith, the Wolfskills gave this woman plenty of money to, quote, use her machine, but it never yielded any results. Soon, Mrs. Comstock was known for what she actually was, a grifter, one of many who preyed on the reward for Edith's return, $5,000, dead or alive. Pretend psychics and liars threw investigators off track all the time with false leads. Others just really wanted to help and became hypervigilant in their efforts to find her. Unfortunately, again, this yielded no results that brought the investigation any progress. Meanwhile, hundreds of searchers went for a more straightforward route, combing the hills, creeks, and orchards every day on foot. A pilot from Vallejo took to the skies looking for her via aerial sweeps, and again, there was that reward pot that drew seekers from across the state looking for her. Now, only one clue was found with all of these efforts. One single footprint, a few miles from the Wolfskill home, that appeared to match Edith's, quote, badly worn shoes. While at that point police thought Edith was alive and had not been kidnapped, the case of Edith Wolfskill soon did grow cold. Months passed. As what often happens with high-profile missing persons cases, a swarm of reported, quote, sightings of Edith popped up in the press and came out of the woodwork, but none of them proved to be valid. As summer became fall, an 18-year-old farmer's son named Bernhold Galshoff went out looking for a stick to help him knock down ripening fruit off of the trees. He climbed down into a dry creek bed and saw it, a decomposing body in a pair of overalls. Over 2 months after Edith's disappearance, her body had finally been found. The scene was, of course, gruesome and upsetting, but also puzzling. Based on the state of her body, she had been dead for quite a while. Did they miss her? Was foul play involved, or some kind of transportation of the body to this space a part of her story? Nobody quite knew. Then there was Edith's clothing. She'd left home wearing something light and summery, as many of the newspapers stated, not hiking clothes, nothing durable. But she was found in men's overalls, which had, according to the investigation, apparently belonged to a local man who had worked on the property several months earlier. Those who had known Edith also were confused by this point. They were adamant that she had a phobia about even touching other people's clothing. The dress that she had allegedly been wearing the day she vanished, according to my research, was also found hanging in her closet, which just served to strengthen law enforcement's belief that Edith's family was not being entirely honest with them, that they perhaps had some kind of part in this clothing swap. For what reason? We're not entirely sure. The overalls themselves had a faded note in them, one that remained indecipherable throughout the investigation. Her shoes, at the crime scene, were placed delicately nearby, as if she had taken them off right before her death. Then there was the area that her body was found, a mere mile and a half from her home, in a place everyone was sure had been searched, quote, innumerable times, by hundreds of people and several tracking dogs. Everyone wondered how could they possibly miss this body so close to home, with so many people going over the area. Again, another mystery. There were also footprints around Edith's body, but they were not, unfortunately, helpful whatsoever. Police admitted that people had been walking all over the area, again, as we know, and the crime scene, unfortunately, for months, so the prints could realistically belong to anyone. An autopsy of Edith Wolfskill's body also didn't seem to help. What remained of Edith's body was in poor shape for analysis. Quote, "I fear we will not be able to tell whether she died of natural causes," an autopsy surgeon told the press. "So far, we have established that no bones were broken and no poison taken." A coroner's jury could only rule that Edith had died, quote, "from cause unknown." Meanwhile, Matthew and Nay seemed less interested in their sister's death than they were the money. Their father's will stipulated that if Edith died before her brothers, her estate would be equally split between them. Before Edith's body was even discovered, the brothers had launched legal battles over how exactly her money should be divided and who would continue. And this argument, legal battle, would continue far into the investigation. After her body was eventually found, Matt, who always believed Edith was kidnapped, now refused to speak to anyone. Nay, who previously thought Edith died of exposure, had a new theory, and he intended to keep it to himself. Quote, "Don't ask me for the basis of my new theory," Nay insisted, telling the press, quote, "I'm investigating it in my own way. When the proper time comes, I'll make it public." But Nay never did make that theory public. Edith was buried in Inglewood Park Cemetery next to her parents. Nay Wolfskill lived to be 69 and died with less than $25,000 to his name. Matt Ashby Wolfskill passed away at 79 and was buried in Woodland, California. Strangely, Matt's wife Irma leapt to her death from her eighth-floor apartment shortly after her husband died. She was 82 years old. So what exactly happened to Edith Wolfskill? Honestly, we don't know. The details are so specific, so mysterious, as was her history, her life, her day-to-day dynamics before her death. But Edith may have left behind a few hints, or so some experts think. Pioneering UC Berkeley criminologist Edward O. Heinrich inspected the faded note that was tucked into Edith's overalls. Using early forensic technology, Heinrich was able to revive parts of the dim script, which read, quote, "Do not give anything. Do not show sympathy. Do not speak to any nurse. Do not speak magic. Walk out. Sleep only in the daytime and drink water. Bathe before I dress. Use gifts. Shun all charred." Something else was discovered on a farm next to the Wolfskills much later. A rancher there noticed a shack on the property, uninhabited for years as far as he knew, showing signs of some type of occupation. A bed had been at one point slept in. Fresh ashes filled the stove, and decaying eggshells and other food scraps were scattered around the cabin. Most striking of all, a few religious phrases had been scrawled on the walls. One of these phrases was "Go to heaven," looking like it was maybe written in the deceased heiress's handwriting. Perhaps Edith Wolfskill wanted to leave her identity behind at the ranch, opting for an even more simple and rustic life. Perhaps she was killed by her brothers in a conspiracy to get her money. Perhaps she was killed by a trespasser or on someone else's property. Maybe she was ready to go, somehow connected to heaven in a way that we'll never understand. Whatever actually happened, the scandal around Edith Wolfskill seemed to die with her brothers, and the secrets of the controversial heiress will likely never be revealed, immortalized fully in the mysterious and beautiful Solano Canyon Hills.